Tonight we are going to be moving on to the last section of our adulting series. So we've been going through, if you've been with us for the last several months, we've been going through different topics that have to do with helping us transition from adolescence into adulthood. Some of the things that maybe we need a little extra encouragement in. So we looked at work. How do we think about our work? What does it look like to have a biblical and gospel-centered approach to our work? And then we spent a few weeks thinking about money. How do we manage our money? How do we deal with money as followers of Christ? And now the third area that we're going to branch into tonight, that's going to take us the next couple months as we finish up this series, is the topic of relationships. This is something that, as a ministry team, we periodically stop and take some time to think about what do we want to be teaching about at YAF? What are some topics or passages of scripture or sections of the Bible that we want to talk about here? And for some reason, every time we have that conversation, somebody says, relationships. We should talk about relationships. And I think the reason for that is that as young adults, this is something that we're all kind of trying to figure out. And I think the primary thing that people have in mind when we come to talk about relationships at a young adult group is things like dating and marriage and romantic relationships. And we're going to get to those in this series, but what we want to try to do is to frame this a little bit more broadly and to think about what are all the different kinds of relationships that we have in life. That certainly includes romantic relationships, that includes dating and marriage, but there are other relationships that are worthwhile spending some time to think about as well. So in the first couple weeks of this series, we're going to look at some of those types of relationships. Next week, we're going to take a look at friendship. What does it look like to have close friendships with each other in a way that is honoring and pleasing to the Lord? Why is that important, and what does that look like? And tonight, what we're going to look at is the relationship that we have with our parents. Because as young adults, sometimes that can be a tricky thing to figure out. What does it look like to relate to our parents? What is it supposed to look like? It certainly looks differently than it used to when we were kids in high school or earlier. It also looks differently than it will one day, maybe 20 or 30 years from now. And there's kind of a transition that's taking place in the way that we relate to our parents. So we're going to take tonight to look at that idea. What should our relationship with our parents look like? And this has been an issue for me, that kind of the different ways that we relate to our parents over the course of a lifetime. This has been something for me that has kind of been on my way in a unique way this past week. We have our little baby, Peyton, 4.5 months old now at home. And babies, so I knew this before having a kid, but now I like know this, like seriously. Babies can't do anything for themselves. And you kind of know that, right? They're dependent on you for everything. But one of the things that has surprised me, and again, I knew this, but living it, it just kind of brings it to light in a new way. Babies can't even sleep on their own. Like this thing that we just totally take for granted. You go to bed, you lay down, you fall asleep, you wake up some number of hours later. Babies can't even do that on their own. When they're first born, you have to swaddle them. You have to wrap them tight so that they can't move their arms, because they have this reflex, this startle reflex, where they just, in their sleep, move their arms and it wakes them up. So they actually can't sleep even on their own without help from their parents. They're totally dependent on their parents for everything. So that idea has been very present on my mind for the last several months. But just in the last couple weeks, I've been thinking more about what our relationship with our parents looks like on the other end of life. We found out about 3.5 weeks ago that Lindsay's grandpa on her mom's side had lung cancer. And he was still feeling pretty good at the time, but the doctors were kind of starting to do tests and saying, this doesn't look good. So we made the call 3 weeks ago to book flights to go out to Virginia this past week. And when we got there, he was in the hospital, and he was declining quickly. And we actually just got news this morning that he passed away during the night last night, which was a good thing because he was very sick, and it was time for him to go. But in his last couple days while we were out there, we saw him go from a place of being very dependent on other people to being completely dependent on other people. He could do nothing for himself in those last couple of days. And that's not the story for everybody in old age, that that their life comes to an end in that way. But the reality is that as our parents get older, there comes a point where we used to be the ones totally dependent on them, but at a certain point in life, they become totally dependent on us. And I was able to watch Lindsay's mom and her uncle care for her dad in every way possible. Every way that everything that he needed, they were there to provide for him. So this is kind of the life cycle that our relationship with our parents has. Moving from a place of us being completely dependent on them to them being completely dependent on us, and somewhere in the middle, those roles kind of change. And in young adulthood and kind of mid-adulthood, maybe for many of us a few years from now, I think that's when we really start to see those roles switching in ways, changing around, being different than they used to. So when you're a kid, so you kind of come out of being a baby, now you're a kid, you're in elementary school, you're in middle school, well, maybe not middle school yet, you're in elementary school or before elementary school, and your relationship with your parents is one very much of trust. They just tell you, you have this confidence in them that they are going to provide for you, that they're going to take care of you, that when they say something, you can trust it. And it's this very much kind of blind trust relationship that a little kid has with their parents. The only reason they trust them is just because they're their parents, and they've proven themselves, so they have a strong confidence that their parents are going to provide for them, and the things that they say, you can trust. And then you get into high school, and that starts to change a little bit, and maybe just because mom and dad say something ought to be this way, you don't necessarily agree with them that it ought to be that way. And you start pushing back a little bit, and maybe there's some tension in a relationship with your parents as you start to gain more independence and they're learning how to still be parents and still give instruction but give you that independence. And then you get to college or out of high school and you're working, and there's kind of this period of faux independence where you feel like you're independent of them, but if they were to just go away, you would probably realize that you were actually a lot more dependent on them than you thought you were. Maybe some of us are in a situation like that right now where we're relying on our parents for various needs that we might still have. And then we enter into young adulthood and mid-adulthood and late adulthood, and our parents get older, and at some point, now this relationship goes from something where instead of us depending on them for things, they start depending on us for things. And I think in my relationship with my parents, I'm just starting to get the first little tastes of that. My dad made a comment to me. They were out here in February, and we went up to Tahoe for the weekend, and he made an interesting comment. He said, you know, so we were driving up, and it was snowing, and it was bad weather, and he's like, you know, Dan, that drive, I felt a lot more comfortable on that drive knowing that you were here with me. Like, if something happened, that you were here to help solve whatever this problem was. And that was the first time that in that way I had started to feel there are some ways, at least, in which my parents are dependent on me for things and looking to me for things that they hadn't before. So what I want to do tonight, as we think about this ever-changing relationship that we have with our parents, and we try to get at, as young adults, what is that relationship supposed to look like? What I want to do tonight is to look at a passage in Ephesians chapter 6 where Paul gives some instructions to children and some instructions to parents, and try to figure out what does that mean for us as young adults. Then I'm going to give some reflections just sort of on what my experience has been in relating to my parents in this stage of life. And then we have Ray Kestner here with us. Hi, Ray. Thanks for coming. And Ray has been at PBC for some time, and he has adult children of his own, four kids in their 20s and 30s. And so then he's going to come up towards the end and share from a parent's perspective, what is it like to parent kids who are moving into young adulthood and adulthood? Because that's an interesting process for our parents to go through as well as it is for us. So that's kind of what we're going to do tonight. We're going to look at Ephesians. I'm going to share a few thoughts on my experience, and then we're going to hear from Ray, and then we'll have a chance to discuss some things in small groups. So the passage that I want to look at tonight is from Ephesians chapter 6. Chapter 6, 1 through 4, and I'm going to read these verses and then try to put them in their context and help us understand a bit of what Paul is saying here and how this relates to us as young adults. So this is Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So this passage comes at a point in Ephesians. It's in the middle of a section that's referred to as the household codes. This was something that was common in the ancient world, that there were instructions that addressed the three main types of relationships that would take place in the ancient household. It would address husbands and wives, parents and children, and slaves and masters. These were the three different kinds of relationships that made up a household in the ancient world. And the ancient world, the Greco-Roman world, was one that was very, very male-centric, very male-dominant, where men had power, cultural power over their wives, and by extension, fathers had tremendous power over their families and what happened within that, and the head of the household would have a tremendous amount of power over the slaves and the servants that were in his house. The head of the household had a title called a paterfamilias, and this was sort of like the head honcho. This was the patriarch of the family, and he had an incredible influence and legal power over everything that took place in his family. So when it comes to the relationship of parents and kids, this person, this father who was at the head of the house, would have the legal right to do to his kids physically whatever he wanted, whatever he thought was necessary, to beat them, to discipline them, to punish them, whatever he wanted. He even had the ability to decide to punish one of his kids with death. Father could kill one of his children with no legal repercussions. When a baby was born into a family, this head of the household, who was not only over his own kids, but also only over his son's kids as well, if they were in his household, this person had the ability to decide when a baby was born if this baby was going to live. And if there was some sort of disability, or if this child looked weak in some way, or oftentimes, in many cases, if this child was a daughter and was unwanted by the family, then he could just decide to have this baby killed, to leave it out on the street, to give it away, to sell it, or to just stop taking care of it. So this man had complete authority over every aspect of his family, with no repercussions, legal repercussions, for things that we would think are abhorrent in our culture. So this is the context that Paul writes this into. And as he addresses these three sets of relationships, husbands and wives, parents and children, masters and slaves, in each case he's addressing somebody who had cultural power and somebody who didn't have cultural power. And the general trend that we find in these relationships is that the party that is lacking in power, Paul doesn't command them to subvert those in authority over them, but rather to accept sort of the position that they're in, with some nuances. But what Paul does do then is, to those who have power, he calls them to either lay it down or to wield that power in a way that was very different than was culturally expected. So he does that with husbands and wives, and that's what he's doing here with parents and children. So let me walk us through this passage a little bit to see how Paul is doing this. So he starts off and he says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." A couple things here. One, the reason that Paul gives for children to obey their parents, which would have been commonly understood, yes, children are supposed to obey their parents. The reason that he gives is he qualifies that obedience with "in the Lord." In other words, you're not supposed to obey your parents just because this is what the culture says, just because you find yourself in this situation where you really have no choice but to obey your parents. But rather, you're supposed to obey your parents as an act of obedience to the Lord. That if you want to be obedient to the Lord as a child, one of the ways that you do that, one of the primary ways that you do that, is by being obedient to your parents. But then the question stands for us as young adults: would Paul say the same thing to us today? Would he tell us as young adults who by and large are not living under the authority of our parents, who are not dependent on them in ways that we used to be, would he give us the same command to obey our parents? Because when I think of my responsibilities toward my parents in this stage of life, I don't think of myself as needing to obey them in the same way that I used to. So if I want to go out and buy a new car, and my mom says, "Dan, you don't have enough money to go buy a new car. You shouldn't do that." I have the ability to say, "No, Mom, I'm going to go buy a new car." And I don't feel a responsibility necessarily to obey my parents in that way. Now, I want to take their advice into consideration. I want to ask what they think about things. But my perspective, from sort of where I sit culturally, is that this command, it doesn't feel like it should apply to me. But we're studying this passage as a pastoral staff a few months ago, and I made that observation, like, I don't feel like this is something that applies to me as a young adult. And Alice Yan, who's our children's pastor and is from a Chinese family, said, "Well, in my culture, you're absolutely supposed to obey your parents." That as a young adult, the assumption would be not that now you're out from underneath having to obey them, but that this is something that continues all through your life. So our cultural perspective, our sort of gut reaction when we hear this instruction from Paul, either I'm supposed to do this or I'm not supposed to do this, that isn't really enough, because we're influenced heavily by sort of our situation in culture and the families and the cultural conditions that we find ourselves in. So then the question remains, though, should we obey our parents? Are we under some sort of biblical obligation to do what our parents ask us or tell us to do in this stage of life? And I think that's going to become more apparent as we continue through the passage. So let's keep going. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." So Paul's appealing to obedience to our parents as part of our obedience to the Lord, but he's also kind of appealing to his cultural common sense, which was that, yes, it's right for children to obey your parents. This is something that's right in their culture, which it certainly was. Everyone would agree that, yes, children were supposed to obey their parents. But then Paul goes on, and he says, "Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise." So here what Paul is doing is he's jumping back to the Old Testament. He's jumping back to the Ten Commandments, the fifth of which is honor your father and mother. So Paul is rooting his instruction to children to obey their parents back in the Old Testament law. He's saying this is part of being obedient to the Lord. This is part of something that just makes sense in our culture, but this is also something that's rooted in the law that God has given his people. Honor your father and mother. But honor is, it's a different word than obey. It's a different idea than obey. It doesn't necessarily include the idea of, or it includes the idea of obeying, but it's also more broad than that in the way that it's used. So again, the question then is this something that applies to us? One of the things that's helpful in getting at that question is to think about how was this Old Testament law, the Ten Commandments, found in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, how was that command to honor our father and mother understood by people at that time? Because this is the justification that Paul is giving for telling children to obey their parents. And what we see if we look back at Jewish reflections back on the Ten Commandments and the way that people understood it at that time is that honoring your father and mother did include obeying them while you were under their rule, while you were under their authority, while you were living in their house. But then there came to be a time in life where honoring your mother and father didn't necessarily require obeying them, but as one commentator said, it always implied giving deference to and caring for parents as you continue throughout life. So giving honor to them, caring about what they think and what they say and what they want you to do, and then caring for them as they once cared for you as you go throughout life. So this is how people in the Old Testament would have understood that commandment to honor our father and mother. And I think that as Paul quotes this verse from the Old Testament in order to pass on the instructions for children to obey their parents, that he has something similar in mind. That when you are a child, and the word that he uses here for children is a word that has to do more with the relationship between parent and child than a particular age. So this word, this Greek word that he uses is not one that at some point you stop to be a child. You're always the child of your parents is what this is getting at. So he's addressing children, both young children and adult children, and he's exhorting them to obey your parents, but then citing this verse that implies that what that looks like over time changes. That acknowledges that the relationships that we have with our parents change over time. So, honoring our parents is something that we always want to do, that we're always instructed to do, as long as we remain their children. While obedience is something that doesn't necessarily carry on in every way as we enter more fully into the realm of adulthood. But I want to give us a word of caution here, because I think that there's two different ways that we can go wrong when we think about this distinction between obeying our parents and honoring them. We can either, on the one hand, cling so tightly to this idea that honoring them doesn't include necessarily obeying them, that we all of a sudden have no regard for what they think and what they say. And we're not interested in hearing their advice. And when they do give us instruction, when they do try to weigh in on the decisions that we're making in our life, we just hold them at an arm's length and say, well, I don't have to obey you anymore. I have to honor you, but I don't have to obey you anymore. And if that's the stance we take, then we're probably at risk of actually not honoring our parents, if that's the kind of perspective that we take. But the other way that we could go wrong with this is to think that as young adults, as adults, that honoring our parents always includes obeying them. And that everything that they tell us as we go throughout life is an instruction that we have to follow to the T if we're going to be faithful to the words of Scripture. And we can become controlled by our parents in a way that I think Scripture doesn't necessarily intend to be the case. So on the one hand, if we cling too much to the idea that we don't have to obey, we're probably not going to honor them either. But if we hold so closely to the idea that we should obey, then we might not be living in the full freedom that the gospel offers us through Jesus. So I think we need to hold those two things in tension, and we need to ask the Holy Spirit in our lives, what does it look like for me to honor my parents? So Paul then continues in this passage in verse 3. Verse 2, honor your mother and father. This is the first commandment with a promise, which is true. If you look at the Ten Commandments, there's just one that includes a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Why does Paul cite this promise? Probably to highlight the fact that this commandment is treated in a way in the law that other commandments are not. That it's given a promise as a way of giving it some weight. That this is a really important thing. That it can be easy to not do this. That a lot of people might be in danger of getting this wrong. So the law wanted to emphasize the importance of this command by attaching this promise along with it. That it will go well with you and that you will live long in the land. That you will reap benefits in this life to honoring your parents. So Paul wants to reinforce that idea as a way of emphasizing the importance of the command that we continue to honor our parents throughout a lifetime. So that's kind of a summary of what the instructions that Paul is giving to children. But then he turns and he addresses the fathers, which, again, in that culture, the father was the head of the household, the one that had the primary responsibility for raising children, for giving instruction to children. But this is something that we could, in our culture, definitely expand to parents. Paul's addressing parents here. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So we can see that as children are supposed to honor their parents and obey them as a part of that, that so parents are not supposed to intentionally do things that are going to cause their children to be angry. They're supposed to approach them with gentleness. They're not supposed to try to raise up an angry or a rebellious response in them. That's the negative command that Paul gives. Do not provoke your children to anger. That doesn't mean that if they become angry, they've done something wrong. I'm sure we've all been angry teenagers at times. Probably more our fault than our parents' fault. So Paul gives this instruction to fathers. Don't provoke your children to anger, but, and this is the positive commandment, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That this was something that was very countercultural at the time. That fathers were not so much thinking about disciplining and instructing their children, but about punishing their children when they didn't obey them. And Paul wants to point out here that being a parent is not about punishing your children. It's not about mandating their obedience with these strict sort of punishments that follow with disobedience, but rather you're supposed to bring them up in discipline, which is different than punishment. Discipline, which implies correction and guidance, and instruction in the Lord. So parents are supposed to raise their children, bring them up by providing some discipline, some correction, some guidance, and instructing them in what it looks like to follow the Lord. And this becomes a cycle that then is dependent on the other party. So as children, it becomes easier to honor our parents when they raise us in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And for parents, it becomes easier to do that, to raise your children in the Lord, when they willingly obey you and honor you. So this is the kind of relationship that Paul wants to foster and encourage between parents and children. Well, hopefully that gives us a good sense, or at least leads us into the discussion of, as young adults, what does it look like to be faithful to the Bible and relate to our parents in a way that is honoring to them? And the specifics of that are going to look very different depending on who we are and what our parents are like and the families that we're born into. So I just want to share just a couple ways in which I've seen my relationship with my parents change over the last 5 to 10 years, and the ways that I try to honor them in this stage of life. So my parents are both believers, and they've done their best to raise me in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. And on the whole, we've had a pretty good relationship. There hasn't been any point in our lives where our relationship was incredibly strained. There was obviously some of that that took place in childhood and through high school and even college some. But when I got to college, that was the first time where I at least was self-aware enough to see my relationship with my parents changing. And when I would go away to college, there was this sense, and one of the things my dad said as I was going away to college for the winter semester of my freshman year, as we were saying goodbye in the airport, he was like, "Man, Dan, this is really hard to see you go because I feel like I'm losing my best friend. I feel like I'm losing my best friend when you go back to college." And it was at that point where I started to think about, you know, I didn't used to really have a friendship with my dad, but now something's a little bit different. And he's still my dad, he's still my parent, but now there's this friendship that started growing at that point. And that's continued to grow from then until now. And as I graduated college and went into seminary and started working and became more and more able to take care of myself and my family and be independent of my parents, now as a young adult, the way that I try to go about honoring my parents, there's a few different things that I think of when it comes to that. One of which is something that I've kind of touched on now, and that's to really care what my parents think about the way that I live my life and the decisions that I make. So when I come to big life decisions or even small life decisions, I go to my parents, and not in every case, but often, and I ask them, "What do you think about this? What would you do in this situation? If you were confronted with this, how would you handle it?" And I take their advice, and sometimes I do what they would do, and sometimes I don't. But I give it a weight in my life that I don't give to everybody else, to actually most other people, because these are my parents, and they know me better than other people, and they love me more than anybody else. So I trust that they have my best interest in mind, and I want to honor them by taking their advice and their thoughts seriously. Another way that I try to honor them is by making time for them, which is a difficult thing to do when life is busy and I live halfway across the country from them. It's easy to kind of stop or forget to make time for them. But a discipline that I try to do is to call both of my parents every week. That's a rhythm that I feel like works for us. For some people, maybe you're like, "That's way too frequently." For other people, you're like, "I do that every other day." I don't know what it is for you, but something that works for us. Because honoring my parents is not so much about what I feel is honoring to them, but what they feel is honoring to them. And for them, they feel like if I stay in touch with them something like once a week, that is a way to show that I care about them, that I want to pursue relationship with them, and that I want to stay in touch with them. So that's a rhythm that we've fallen into. Is staying in touch in some way about once a week. Another way that I try to honor them is by thanking them for all that they've done for me over the years. They have sacrificed an incredible amount for me. And as I get older and am able to look back more reflectively on what that was like for them, I want to stop and regularly thank them for all that they did for me, for the ways that they provided for me, for the way that they instructed me, for the way that they raised me to follow the Lord. I want to stop and regularly thank them for the way that they've done that. And the last way that I would say I've tried to do this is to be aware of their changing needs. My parents are not that old. They're in their mid-50s. So they don't depend on me for a lot of things. But yet, their needs are changing, and they do depend on me in different ways. So I know that this is something especially that I have to do even more as time goes on, is be aware of how their needs are changing so that I can step in and help out when appropriate as a way of showing them honor. So those are just a few of the ways that as a young adult, I've tried to wrestle with the question, what does it look like for me to honor my parents? And again, for you, that might be different. It might include some of those things. It might be variations of some of those things. And it might include other things that, for your parents, honoring them includes whatever it is. These are the things that I feel like, for me and for my parents, have helped me be able to honor them in this stage of life. So with those thoughts out there, looking at Ephesians 6 and sharing some of my own perspective, I want to invite Ray up, and he's going to share with us a little bit about what it's been like from a parent's perspective to have kids transition into adulthood. So thanks, Ray, for being here.
Okay. So Dan told you we have four kids. My oldest son is 30. Then I have a daughter who's 28, and another daughter who's 25, and then another son who's 22. So the youngest is in his fourth year of college. The older three all got married 2 summers ago. So we had 3 weddings in a summer. Pretty fun. So that's kind of where they're at in life. And all those things affect sort of how our relationship is with our kids. I want to start off with a disclaimer that I can tell you what our family looks like. Everybody's family's different. Everybody's going to have different experiences. And sometimes when you talk about families, it's a joyful thing because you have a good relationship with your family. Sometimes it's not so happy because maybe you have some difficulties or some issues and stuff like that. And so I want to give you space for that. We have four kids, so that certainly impacts how things work out in our family. Maybe you're an only child. Maybe your parents got divorced or split up, or maybe a parent has passed away or something like that. So everybody's situation is different. And so just wanted to keep that in mind. Another thing with families is that everybody's family has issues, and so it's really easy when you look at other people's families to say everybody's family is perfect except for mine. And guess what? If you start to get to know people better, even the people that seem like they have the most perfect families, they have issues that they're dealing with too and stuff. And so as I talk, I'm going to talk about my kids and our relationships, I think, are really good and healthy. We have our issues, too, in our family that I'm not going to talk about, which are more like towards my wife's family and my family. But I'm not going to talk about those. But we do have stuff. So our family is kind of a traditional family. Giving you a little background, the formation of your relationship with your parents, our relationship with our kids as young adults, it really starts before they turn into adults. It starts, from birth and through elementary school, middle school, high school, and stuff like that. And so if your relationship with them was troubled in high school or younger, then, it makes sense for there still to be issues and things like that when you're a young adult. That's just kind of how things work. And you might have scars and things like that that are hanging around that are standing in the way of kind of how you relate to your parents, how they relate to you. I mentioned to Dan, one of the things that drives me crazy about my kids is I see so much of myself in my kids. And that's really good. You know, there's the things that I really like about myself that I see in my kids. And then there's the things that frustrate me the most, which are the things that I don't like in my own self and stuff like that. So a lot of issues with, you know, between parents and kids are because parents are still struggling and dealing with issues about themselves that they don't like and don't know how to deal with stuff like that. So give your parents grace for some of those things. Okay, so our family was a traditional family. Beth was a stay-at-home mom. We were fortunate enough to be able to do that. Our kids were all raised in this church. And I was an involved dad all the way through with my kids. When they were super young, we did lots and lots of park time. As they got older, I coached soccer for all of them except for my oldest son. And that gave me a chance to spend a lot more time with them and with some of their friends. I got to see them interact with some of their friends in ways that I probably wouldn't have seen otherwise. And one of the things that your parents probably, they may or may not tell you this, but the truth is that when we become parents, we don't know what we're doing. We're learning on the job. And so some people are quicker at adapting to that. Some people are naturally good at it, and some other people struggle with that. I was blessed enough that my wife was an early childhood education major. And so, yeah, now she knew a lot more going into this thing than I ever did. And so I learned a lot just from watching how she interacted with our kids and worked with them. And some of the things she said were really good stuff. And so that was good. Watching other parents do their thing helped me a lot, learning on how I should be behaving towards my kids and stuff like that. And guess what? That's still true. As an adult with adult children, I watch how other people deal with their adult kids too. And I you know, it's a learning process all the way through. You never have it all figured out. And even with four kids, stuff that worked with my oldest kid, you know, did, you know, it was just a different relationship that I had with him than I had with my other kids. It's I'm learning still, and it's a learning process. All right, generally in high school and younger, our kids were pretty good because they were making pretty good decisions. It was easier to learn how to trust them doing things and getting more independent all the time because we didn't see them making dumb decisions. My oldest son, when he was in middle school and stuff like that, he was an angry child. And so that was kind of a weird time for us. And so, but he grew out of that. And so, you know, a lot of the worries that we had over him in middle school and stuff like that, why by the time he got out of high school, why those worries and fears and stuff like that were gone. And the other kids didn't seem to go through that nearly as much as he did in the middle school year. So it was just interesting to see kind of how kind of hormones and all that sort of stuff affected him. Letting go, you know, Eric was our first off to college, and that was an interesting emotional experience. You guys probably all had, you know, something like that in your background. But it was, for us, it was, you know, it was interesting in a lot of respects because I remember Eric was so nervous. He had enough. He wanted to be an adult, but he was so nervous about it and didn't know how to do it and stuff like that. And so we are, you know, he went down to UCSD. And so we are down there, you know, the whole family went down to drop him off. And we're all there with him, and he's meeting his roommates, and we're all there going, well, you know, how long do we stay? When do we say goodbye? You know, you guys probably can relate to some of those things. And we had lunch with him and his roommate and his roommate's parents. And then, you like that, huh, Tolu? But there just came a point in time shortly after lunch when I looked at Eric and Eric looked at me and he kind of, you know, gave me the sign that says, it's time to go. And so we graciously excused ourselves. But with each kid, it's different, right? With when it was Cheryl's turn, you know, our second one, you know, she gave us permission to stay a lot longer, you know, and for whatever, you know, it's just sort of how where we were at with her and where she was at and stuff like that. And so, you know, it was our kind of, we were on a schedule because she went to UC Riverside, so we're down in Riverside. We had to get back up to the Bay Area that night because we were kind of, you know, it was like Sunday night or something like that was her move-in day. And so knowing that we had, you know, 5 or 6 hour drive in front of us, why, it's like, well, we can only stay so long before we had to go. And so we were the one, it was our fault that we had to leave with her. So it's totally different with each kid. And I was talking to Brian, I talked to my youngest last night, and we were kind of reminiscing about dropping him off for college. And he goes, you know, by his turn, you know, all the other kids were gone. So it was just me and him. And my wife didn't even go for that one for, I forget why. And he goes, it just wasn't fair, right? But, you know, so each kid is different. I remember going to parent orientation weekend at college with all of our kids, you know. I just remember the first or second one that I was at. Well, you know, they separate the parents and the kids pretty quick, and the parents that their kids have been gone for 15-20 minutes, and they're already texting their kids to see what they're doing and make sure they're okay. And I just thought, are you kidding me? And the college professors would, or the college counselors were giving the parents lectures about your kids are adults now. And you can't be doing this all the time. And we can't tell you what their grades are. And we can't do this. And you can't. And I just thought, man, what parents are there that are doing all this stuff? That so you know, some people have more trouble letting go of their kids than others. So that was kind of fun. Dan, I'm impressed that you call your parents once a week. Man, I wish my kids called me once a week. No. Our kids, you know, each one kind of communicates differently. And so my youngest, he'll call us maybe once every week or two. The others call us, you know, maybe once or twice a month. Amy is my third kid, second daughter, she's the one who she just doesn't call. I have to call her. And so, you know, and you know, when I talk to her, it's not like she's, oh, why are you calling me, Dad? What do we, you know, it's like she is so happy to talk. And so it's not like it's a problem. It's just kind of, it's funny how that works out. Spiritually, where our kids are at right now, three of them, when they went off to college, three of them quickly found Christian groups to hang out with, and they've kind of carried that on. Still, my oldest, he was struggling spiritually. He was a philosophy minor, and just sort of the way that he thinks is a little different than the rest. And so he's not struggling with his faith, but he's on a spiritual journey. And so and he's open to God. We're as a family. Okay, I was telling Dan about this. As a family, one of the things we've done over the past few years is we have this Kestner Family Book Club, and somebody in the family picks out a book and we read it during the year, and then at the end of the year, maybe at Christmas or something like that, we'll discuss it and stuff like that. So this year it was Eric's pick, and he picked for the Kestner Family Book Club. He said, "Let's read the Bible this year as a family." Yeah, that's way cool. And so, as a family, that's what we're doing, you know. And you know, we're separated, so it's like, oh, I didn't tell you. Okay, so Eric and his wife live down in San Diego, so they're down there. Brian is at UC Irvine. Cheryl and her husband are in Sacramento, and Amy and her husband are Olympia, Washington. And so we're spread out geographically. We don't get to see them very much, which is kind of a sad thing to me. But, you know, but we, you know, so at Christmas time when we get together, why we get to discuss this book. So, but the one of the things that's interesting is Eric has initiated a bunch of discussions on email already about our Bible reading and stuff like that. So it's just fascinating to me to see that. And Amy's comment is I know he's struggling with stuff and he's having a lot of questions, but if he's willing to look at Scripture, God can get through to him through that. So it's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, what else can I tell you? Professionally, none of my kids chose to be programmers. And I'm a programmer. So that made me sad. You know, when Eric was talking about what he should major and stuff like that, he was a psych major. And I go, you know, Eric, I support you in this. This is great. But don't ask for help in this because I can't give you any. I don't understand it. But I also understand how he picked what he picked, right? Because that's part of me too. I'm a people watcher, so I love looking at people and kind of seeing how they tick and stuff like that. And he does that too. And so it's like, I support you in that. Okay, what about now? We have three new members of our family, the new spouses. And so the things that we knew about our kids for their whole lives, it's changed a little bit. We got three new people. They're adjusting to us as much as we're adjusting to them. One of the things we've done in the last couple of years is we've met at Christmas time, and we have a small vacation home up in the mountains. And so we've met up in this small vacation home. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath house. Okay, that's how big it is. And there's nine of us sleeping in this little house thing that we got. And so there's not a lot of privacy. There's people sleeping on the floor and stuff like that. And our kids think nothing of sleeping on the floor and that kind of stuff. But if you're new to the family, why, it's an adjustment. Some of them aren't quite used to being doing that kind of stuff. So it's kind of fun to watch. One of the things that one of my new son-in-laws has said, he has two brothers. And his family's a Christian, but I've seen him interact with his brothers. They're adult guys, and whenever they get together, they kind of don't say much. They kind of grunt at each other, and they're the funniest thing to watch. And one of his comments about us is that our family is different than his family because our family likes being together, which is really cool. I love watching that. And so when we don't get together very often as a family anymore because it's really difficult to schedule stuff, but when we do, it's really a sweet time. And I worry that some of the, you know, our, the four of them interact so much that some of the, I worry that the spouses feel kind of left out sometimes. I don't think that's true, but you know, it's one of those things I'm watching for. Let's see. Anyway, what does our family look like? We don't get together very much anymore. We try and get together. In the last 2 years, we've tried to get together sometime at the holidays. It's usually been New Year's, not Christmas, because there's in-laws that we have to deal with and stuff like that. And maybe one other time, maybe during the summer and stuff. Last year they came up for Father's Day, and that was really a special time. It was a surprise to me, so I was totally blown away. And that was a wonderful thing. I'm not sure what we're going to... There's talk of maybe going... We were talking about going to Montana together, doing something kind of crazy like that. I don't know if we're going to do that or not. I kind of bet not, but it would be fun. I was talking to Amy last week, and they're going to the Tetons this summer, and they invited us to come along with them, and that is really sweet. That is really, really cool. So any time we can spend time with our kids is a wonderful thing. And this year has been much less than last year. For whatever reason, we seem to get together a lot, and this year it's not happening quite so much and stuff. So we're adjusting to what our new life as parents of adult children is, just like they're adjusting to a lot of things too. I'll just finish by saying nothing stays the same. Everything changes and continues to change, and we're continuing to adjust to those changes. So anyway, that's about it. If you have any questions or want to talk, well, I'm happy to talk.
Thanks, Ray. I really appreciate you sharing a bit about your family and kind of that transition that you guys have gone through as they've grown up and moved out of the house and everything. One of the things that Ray touched on that I kind of want to close with is the idea that all of our families are different, right? Some of our parents are believers, some are not. Some of us had really close relationships with our parents, some didn't. Some of us may have lost parents. Some of us may have incredibly strained relationships with our parents. Some of us might have overbearing parents. We all have different relationships with our parents. So as we transition into adulthood, I think we need to recognize that they are transitioning too. This is a process for them, and we're trying to learn what it looks like, and they're trying to learn what it's supposed to look like. And ultimately, we need to have conversations, and we need to be listening to the Holy Spirit to see what that looks like, and be in conversations with each other too. So we're going to split up into some small groups. We're a little after 9, so if you need to take off, feel free. But if you can stick around for a bit, we're just going to have a chance to talk with each other about our relationship with our parents. How are they? And what does it look like for you to honor your parents in this stage of life? So I'm going to throw these questions up here. And if you can stick around, feel free to grab a group of people around you, discuss some of these things, and then I'll come back up in maybe about 10 minutes and send us out for the night.